Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense wins championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning on 95.3 The Ticket. This is Mitten Madness, and I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, getting ready to dive into an hour's worth of sports action around the state of Michigan. There is plenty to dive into as the Tigers have some updates and some things we definitely want to talk about happening over inside of Comerica Park. And then after that, we're getting into a lot of miscellaneous information that might be good to know and maybe you could care less about. But I mean, Michigan State football kind of conversation, Michigan basketball conversations, what's going on with the Lions, and even more information on the Pistons and the Red Wings as they step into their off seasons. So, you know, one of those weird episodes where there's not a ton going on within Detroit at the moment. So that very hard to talk about what's happening around the state of Michigan when there's not a lot going on, but you can always find bits and pieces everywhere. So we're kind of just going to shoot the crap this episode and, you know, make sure that you got all the pertinent information you need, but also maybe a few extra things you could care less without. But I'm excited for the upcoming week. You know, into the weekend, I'm going to be coaching down in Cincinnati this weekend, so that's always fun. A lot of lacrosse action going on for me, both coaching-wise and watching-wise. There's some professional action going on this weekend as well. Obviously, the NBA Finals have already started. The Stanley Cup Finals have started. UFC is about to make its summer push. And the Tigers might be worthy of television baseball again. So I'm really excited to get out on the move, be out in the sun, be around a fun team that's going to have a great summer, but also continue to take in all the sports that make us go crazy. But with that being said, the obligatory is out of the way. And for the first time in a while, we are starting an episode with the Detroit Tigers. The Tigers made some improvements over this past week. You know where we always start? We start in the standings. Tigers are now second from the bottom in the AL Central, fourth place, 10.5 games back as they hold a tiebreaker over the Kansas City Royals. Currently, the Guardians lead the division at 36-28. The White Sox, 33-29, just two games behind. The Twins are seven games behind at 29-35. And then we sit 10.5 games back. When we look at the American League overall, the Tigers are now third from the bottom above both the Royals and the Angels, and just two games behind the Red Sox. So there's a chance that maybe the Tigers are going to start to turn it around and really put it together. In the entire MLB, they're fifth from the bottom. The Rockies, still the worst team in the MLB, tied with the Angels at 24-39. Those both are 18 games behind the leaders. Then the Tigers are tied with the Royals and Giants, who they have tiebreakers over at the moment. And it is 17 games behind for all of those crowds of the league-leading Braves, who are 42-21. The Dodgers out of Los Angeles are 40-23, two games behind. 3.5 games behind are the Milwaukee Brewers at 37-23. And then those Tampa Bay Rays, 36-23, four games behind. And the Yankees, 37-25, 4.5 games behind. The Rays still lead the entire American League at 36-23. The Yankees are a half game behind. Guardians, 2.5 games. White Sox, 4.5 games. And five games back in fifth place, 33-30, are the Mariners. So then looking over at the Tigers and how they've been able to get things back in the groove, right? Batting average leader, Riley Green, a .311. His on-base percentage, a .403. His slugging percentage, a .461. And then Dylan Dingler still leads the team in both home runs and RBIs. He's got 14 jacks. He's got 43 runs batted in. His batting average sits at a .241. On the pitching side of things, Framber Valdez still locking things down in the earned run average category at 4.39. He's got 2 wins, 54 strikeouts. Brent Herder leads the squad with wins at 4. His ERA, 2.84, and his strikeouts are 18. I think you have to have so many innings pitched in order to be the leader for the ERA category. So that would kind of make sense of why Framber Valdez is there, even though there are some ERAs lower than his. Jack Flaherty leads the team in strikeouts with 70. He's only got 1 win on the year. His ERA sits at 5.31. Team has batted in 248 runs, which is 26th in the league. Their batting average of .235 is 23rd. Their on-base percentage of .316 is 22nd. And their slugging percentage of .382 is 21st in the league. All of your batting stats being in the 20th when there are only 30 MLB teams, that's not good at all. You need these to be within, honestly, to be comfortable 13 and higher, in my opinion. You want to be in the top 20% of the league, not even the top quarter. You want to be in the top fifth of the league, which is really going to give you some leeway and space to move, but they have none when the bats are not going essentially at all. On the pitching side of things, their earned run average of 4.02 is 16th. Quality starts of 24 is tied at 7th. Their whip of 1.27 is 15th. And their opposing batting average of .236 is 11th in the league. So the pitching stats kind of in that range and realm that I was talking you want to be in. So it's not the pitching that's the issue, but if you can't get your bats behind you to score runs and help you out, you have to play a lot of defense. Defense gets tiring, and, I mean, you can only pitch for so long. You're going to give up some hits. You're going to give up home runs, and if you can't get the bats to supplement that and help you out, you're essentially already playing a lost game. You're just trying to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. It's a terrible place in position for literally anybody to be in. It's not fun at all, but it's interesting how things are going. We can take a look here at the ABS challenge in just a second. So they've been able to challenge strikes and balls, and that has really completely changed the way some games have played out, because now there's a checks and balance system being put in place for the umpire on those balls and strikes, which I think was well overdue. The last time we talked, the Tigers were preparing for their weekend series against the Chicago White Sox, which they lost game 1-4, 3 and 10, which maybe, you know, gave somebody, and me, I'm talking about me, a little bit of hope that the Tigers would squeeze one out, right? Because we took them to extras. Couldn't have been more wrong. They turned around the next day on Saturday, lost 7-1. Then they turned around the next day on Sunday and lost 2-1. Swept by the White Sox. Never, ever want to see that. But also, something I called out over on the Big Picks with my boy Mark on RKR. But it's wild, okay? It's wild that there's so many sweeps happening to the Tigers. It's not a good place to be in. But then things got wicked. Wicked. Because the Tigers had to go on the road to play at the time not only the American League leading, but the MLB League leading Tampa Bay Rays on the road down in Tampa Bay, right? 3-game series, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. After getting swept by the White Sox and having no rest, there's no way, right? Like, the Tigers have played every day since May 26th. They had Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the 26th, 27th, 28th against the Angels. Then the 29th, 30th, and 31st, they were on the road at the White Sox. And then the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, they were on the road at Tampa Bay before finally getting a day off Thursday, June 4th. But the part that's shocking here is the Tigers swept the Tampa Bay Rays. Game one, they win 10-9. Game two, they win 8-0. Game three, they win 7-2. Holton, Flaherty, and Melton all pick up wins in this game or in the series. Vest and DeJesus pick up saves in these games as well. I don't know what to think about this. Like, there's no way. You could have told me the Tigers were going to go down and sweep the league-leading Tampa Bay Rays, and I would have agreed with you. But when you get two home runs, four RBIs, and four hits on five plate appearances with four runs scored himself for Dylan Dingler, kind of hard to lose that game. I mean, extremely hard, honestly. You got two runs from Kevin McGonigal as well. Riley Green had a run. Riley Green went 3-for-4. Kerry Carpenter, he went 3-for-5. He had a run, a home run, and two RBIs. Riley Green had a home run in this game, three RBIs. Mr. Lee, two runs, a home run, and RBI. He went 2-for-5 on the day as well. The bats were completely going. And like I just mentioned, there's no concern for the pitching for the Tigers. The pitching has been phenomenal. So they were able to get a huge lift off there. Gleyber Torres now back in the rotation, went 1-for-4 with a home run and an RBI. Matt Verling, 2-for-4, one run, two RBIs in the game. Riley Green crashes in again with another home run in back-to-back games. Spencer Torkelson went 2-for-3. Will Perez went 2-for-4. Short goes 2-for-3. Flaherty picked up a huge win in this game. Tigers won 8-0. So the great series for them. They're going to be welcoming in the Mariners for their weekend series Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then they have a day off on Monday before they welcome in the Twins Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then they are on the road for a three-game series against the Guardians in Cleveland on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So a little bit of a tough stretch coming up. Valdez, Montero, and Flaherty up first in the Mariners series. Melton, Valdez, and Montero on the mound for Minnesota. Flaherty undecided, and Melton on the mound for Cleveland. We'll be keeping our eyes on the Tigers and what they're going to be able to do, especially because there's a lot of talk about Tarik Skubal leaving this team and where he might land up, which is not anything we want to hear. I would love to see him stay, but, I mean, the team didn't do well in his absence. They have lost a lot of games. He's coming back from surgery. A lot of question marks. So if they don't pay him, he's surely going to walk out of the door. But that's all we have for the Tigers. When we come back, we'll continue to talk all the miscellaneous things happening across the state of Michigan in the sports realm. More Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. Register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Carter Ostrous here for the Council for Responsible Energy. I want to share a few quick, simple, and inexpensive tips that will not only reduce your home's energy use, but will also save you money on your utility bills. As you switch from heating to cooling, why not opt for a new programmable thermostat that will virtually pay for itself? This is one of the easiest things you can do to really see some significant savings. You can save about $180 a year by properly setting a programmable thermostat. Weather stripping can also significantly lower your bills. You just peel the backing off and seal up any leaks in drafty doors and windows. It only takes a few minutes, but you definitely notice a difference in both the temperature in the house and also your bills. And my last tip, check your home's insulation. Proper insulation in your attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, exterior and basement walls can save you 30% on home energy bills. It's a little bit more work for you, but your wallet will definitely thank you.
A message from the Council for Responsible Energy. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and now we've got a good chunk of time to talk about all the miscellaneous things happening across the state of Michigan in the sports realm. We'll start kind of in the NBA draft here as they're giving some player draft comps for the lottery pick players. AJ DeBonta is saying a supercharged Jaylen Brown on the high end. On the low end, a supercharged R.J. Barrett. The easiest throw line for projecting DeBonta is comparing him to downhill-oriented power wing scorers who get to the foul line and soak up offensive volume. Statistically, it's the simplest way to make sense of his profile. He led D1 in scoring at 21.5 points per game while overpowering defenders into the paint despite missing a fully reliable three-point shot. Scouts take multiple scouts and executives compare DeBonta to a bigger, longer Jaylen Brown. That would be a pretty good outcome because Jaylen Brown has made several all-star teams and was just named to his second all-NBA team and has a conference finals and NBA finals MVP trophy. On the high end, one scout also compared him to Kawhi Leonard, a nod to the seven-time all-star size and physicality on the wing. Darren Peterson out of Kansas, they're saying on the high end, Damian Lillard with better tools, and on the low end, Jamal Murray with better defense. Those are both great comps and honestly would be comps that I think anyone would love to hear about their style of play. Cameron Boozer, Kevin Love with more ball skills on the high end, and DeMontis Sabonis with better three-point shooting on the low end. I mean, once again, phenomenal comps when you look at his game. Very back to the basket, very good rebounder, very good defender, can shoot, can dribble, and has so many potential drawbacks, which are easy to identify, whether it's the glass is half full or half empty. At a certain point, his production and results are too loud to wave off. He's an NBA-ready player who compares favorably as an incoming rookie to nearly every prolific non-rim-protecting power forward of the last 25 years. They have also compared him to Al Horford, a nod to his high basketball IQ and his ability to make the right play and impact the game on many different levels. Caleb Wilson, a bouncier Pascal Siakam. On the high end, a low end, peak John Collins. Keaton Wagler out of Illinois. On the high end, a slower paced Tyrese Halliburton. On the low end, Andrew Nembhard with less defense. The scouts are saying Wagler's game is tough to fit. Halliburton was mentioned multiple times as a potential higher end outcome because of his unselfishness, positional size, ability to play on and off the ball, and to excel without elite athleticism. Wagler also was compared to Josh Giddey, who shares a lot of these qualities, but at a lower level, though Giddey has steadily improved as a shooter, hitting 37% from three in his past two seasons with the Bulls. Wagler will walk into the NBA as a better shooter immediately, which should help with his ultimate upside. Darius Acuff Jr., Detroit native and point guard for Arkansas. On the high end, they're saying Jalen Brunson. On the low end, Mike Bibby. Neither one of those is a bad comp at all. That's where you want to be. The talent evaluators see Acuff as a dynamic on-ball scorer and shot creator. There are questions about whether he will be good enough defensively and whether he can drive winning. Those questions led scouts to compare him to Trae Young. He will be an all-star like Trae has been, one scout said, but will that help you win games? Kingston Flemings out of Houston is a high-end De'Aaron Fox. On the low end, Brandon Knight. Finally, our first Michigan player of the bunch, Ade Mara, center out of Michigan. Right now, projected 8th to the Atlanta Hawks in the mock draft, top 110. They're saying he's number 10 in the class. On the high end, they say Brooke Lopez with better passing. On the low end, a less athletic Andrew Bogut. Part of Mara's unique appeal is his passing skills. There are so few players with his physical dimensions, and very few of them share his ability to process the floor and find teammates with precision. It's an extremely valuable archetype, especially if he emerges as a rim deterrent at 7'3". The potential of Mara developing on an outside shot, a skill that's still at a very early stage, but one that NBA scouts aren't ruling out due to his comfort level with the ball, would be a major boom. Even without it, Mara could become an offensive hub. Mara's a difficult player to compare simply because of his size. The swing skill, though, is his jump shot. If he can continue to improve it, Mara will develop into someone similar to either Lopez or Kristaps Porzingis, a true rim deterrent at one end and a floor spacer at the other. Every team dreams of finding that skill set, especially of someone in Mara's size. But even if his shot never progresses, his ability to wall off the paint could help him become an impact player. That's why he drew comparisons to other massive players with up and down outside shooting, such as Donovan Klingon and Luke Kornet. Mychael Brown Jr., the guard out of Louisville. They're saying on the high end, a smaller LaMelo Ball. On the low end, D'Angelo Russell. Though Brown had an up and down season at Louisville before it was cut short because of back injury, his play with Team USA in the Under-19 World Cup last summer has resonated with scouts. He was arguably the best player on the gold medal winning roster in Switzerland, one that included DeBonsa. Nate Amet, small forward, power forward out of Tennessee, a bigger Harrison Barnes on the high end, a bigger Zaire Williams on the low end, a Braden Burries out of Arizona, a less athletic Derek White on the high end, a low end Quentin Grimes. Here's Yaxel Landenborg bringing up the party at 12, projected to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jalen Johnson on the high end, a low end Aaron Gordon. Landenberg's center-like dimensions and small forward-level versatility make it somewhat tricky to find comparisons. At Michigan, he showed he can defend all five positions, handle the ball in transition, space the floor capably, and impact the game on the glass. The main caveat in his profile, however, is his age. He'll turn 24 in September. Most players who do what he does at a high level are well compensated and highly valuable, but he's already older than a lot of players in the league. His immediate role is probably between that of Johnson and Gordon, two physically gifted and versatile two-way forwards who do a range of things well. But whether Landenborg can acclimate quickly enough to do it at their level is a different question. Johnson is less than a year older than Landenborg and just made his first All-Star team. Whether Landenborg can continue to turn the corner as a player at a rapid rate, tops out as a very useful role player, or winds up something less than remains to be seen. But if he continues to make strides, his physical gifts and blossoming all-around game could translate immediately. Landenborg's ability to do a lot of things while playing power forward elicited a couple of comparisons to another longtime NBA power forward who plays not too far away from Ann Arbor, Detroit Pistons forward Tobias Harris. So there's definitely plenty of options for the Pistons out there to try and go after. We'll see who slides, as the Pistons are well down on the draft stock this year. It's going to be an interesting time, but those comparisons we wanted to get to. Ranking, worst to first, the NFL's most likely turnarounds in 2026. At the top, you're not going to believe it, the Detroit Lions. Their record last year, 9-8. Their odds of winning the division are 38.2% first in our division. The odds of making the playoffs are 68.4, which is sixth in the entire NFL. The Lions have by far the best odds to go from worst to first for three main reasons: their schedule, injuries, and they weren't really that bad last season. Of course, this is exactly what had been written about the 49ers a year ago, so there are certainly no guarantees. We'll start with the quality of the team. The Lions finished last season ranked third in both FPI and DVOA. Yes, there are questions about the interior offensive line, but this is a team that is ranked among the league's top eight offenses for four straight seasons. The defense also had excellent talent, and the DVOA ranked the Lions in the top 10 for all three phases of the game in both 24 and 25. Don't forget that Detroit had a winning record last season and was actually one win away from finishing second in the NFC North. In one of these years, the Lions might make it through a season without suffering the most defensive injuries of any team in the league. Detroit ranked dead last in adjusted games lost on defense last season, and only the Cardinals had more injuries overall. The Lions' schedule ranks 27th in the league, and by the average projected DVOA of their opponents. The other three teams in the NFC North all have schedules ranked 18th or harder. Getting Arizona on their schedule instead of the other three NFC West teams is huge, but the Lions also play the Giants and Titans instead of the tougher teams their division rivals must face. They're putting the New Orleans Saints at 2, the New York Giants at 3, the Tennessee Titans at 4, Raiders at 5, Jets at 6, Browns at 7, Cardinals at 8. A.J. Brown went to the Patriots, Myles Garrett to the Rams. A lot of movement has been going on. Max Crosby will continue to get looks. He already got traded this offseason. Well, sort of. He was headed to Baltimore for a pair of first-round draft picks until the Ravens backed out over medical concerns. So now he is back on the chopping block and may be someone who gets traded. Kayshon Boutte, wide receiver out of New England. James Conner from the Arizona Cardinals. Brandon Ayuk of the 49ers. Kyle Pitts Sr. of the Falcons. Spencer Rattler of the Saints. Josh Sweat of the Cardinals. Alvin Kamara of the Saints. Kayvon Thibodeau of the Giants. And Mac Jones of the 49ers. All really on the block. Lions do have other big news as their rookie wide receiver Kendrick Law suffered a torn ACL during Tuesday's OTA practice and non-contact drill. He was selected fifth in the fifth round of the 2026 NFL draft out of Kentucky after the Lions traded up 13 spots to land him at 168. He said, "It's all part of it, the harsh reality, but he'll get it out of the way early and have his whole career in front of him." Campbell said Thursday, "Hate to start with that. That's a bit of a negative, but everybody else is doing good. Everybody else is improving." So we'll see how that affects them moving forward. We still have to, get in on everything that is going to be fun about the NFL this year. The schedules are out for the most part, and I think the Lions have a favorable schedule in front of them. As we mentioned before, they start with the Saints, then the Bills, then the Jets, the Panthers, the Cardinals, the Packers, Vikings, Dolphins, Patriots, Bucks, Bears, Falcons, Titans, Vikings, Giants, Bears, Packers. So as long as they do halfway decent within the NFC North, they have all the favorable matchups in the teams that are selective. So I really like their chances. They were third in total passing yards, tied for fourth in points for, 14th in rushing yards. It's not like this team couldn't score the ball offensively, because they surely could. They just had tons of defensive injuries, so hopefully they're able to keep that in lock. But that's all for now. When we come back from the break, we'll be touching on more miscellaneous things happening across the state of Michigan in the sports realm. With more Ben Mattis here on 95.3 The Tick.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working.
Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious. 1 in 10 kids vape serious. Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. We got more miscellaneous things happening around the state to touch in on. We'll hop right back on the ice in Little Caesars Arena. Although their season ended not too long ago, the Red Wings are back in the conversation as most likely to be traded. Center Dylan Larkin of the Detroit Red Wings. He's 29. His cap hit is $8.7 million for the season. Larkin turned the trade market on its head when he requested a trade this offseason, which is what happens when one plays five playoff games in 11 seasons and doesn't have the sunniest relationship with his general manager. Larkin has five straight seasons of 30 goals or better, and he has shown during Team USA's run to Olympic gold, he can also certainly lock it down defensively. Centers like him don't often shake free, especially ones locked into contracts with a reasonable cap number through 2030-31. It's here we'll note that one of his closest friends is Minnesota Wild star defenseman Quinn Hughes, who plays for a team that certainly could use a number one center. The Wild had goalie Jesper Walstedt and forward Danila Yurov in a trade offer for Robert Thomas last season as an FYI. That's going to be huge. I mean, that's the biggest news for the Red Wings right now. Sure, other players could be on their radar to come in, but that is a big replacement to make. Is to have to go out and say, hey, our captain, our leader, the guy we want to see win and help us get there, is on his way out the door. So looking at things here, the Detroit Red Wings have projected cap space of $30.1 million. Their draft picks this year are 2nd, 3rd, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 7th. So one pick in the 2nd, one pick in the 3rd, one pick in the 5th, one pick in the 6th, one pick in the 7th. And then they have a 7th round pick that is traded to, or that was traded to them by the Calgary Flames. Detroit was exciting out of the gate this season in an excellent position to bust a decade-long playoff drought. The Red Wings were initially electric up front with Alex DeBrincat in a 40-plus goal effort, Lucas Raymond operating at a point-per-game pace, and Dylan Larkin eclipsing the 30-goal mark again, each making Detroit a viable threat. John Gibson settled in nicely in goal, leading up to midseason with some steady veteran consistency. At the same time, Detroit got a solid look at its future in skaters such as Emmett Finney, who overachieved in his rookie season as a true contributor. Detroit was a serious contender for first place in the Atlantic Division going into the Olympic break and ended the season with its highest point total since last playoff appearance in 2016. But what went wrong? The Red Wings blew it, not just once, but repeatedly. Detroit held a postseason slot for the majority of the season, then its breakdown in March completely snuffed out those hopes altogether. Detroit was the league's fourth worst team that month, going 5-7-2 while losing significant ground in the standings to surging teams in Boston, Ottawa, and Buffalo. The Red Wings' offense became unreliable. It ranked 29th in 5-on-5 scoring, and the dwindling attention to defensive details resulted in a pileup of blown leads, including in a loss to New Jersey, with two games remaining that eliminated Detroit from the playoffs. It all felt like more of the same from the Red Wings, especially to their fan base, which booed their skaters off the ice following the defeat against the Devils. There were injuries Detroit had to weather in the back half of the season, but given where the Red Wings were in late February, it's a stunning disappointment that they fell out of a postseason spot. And adding insult to injury, it was Detroit's division rival Buffalo that passed the torch of league's longest playoff drought onto the Red Wings at 10 seasons. It's imperative that Detroit addresses its problem generating consistent, even strength scoring. Outside of DeBrincat, Larkin, and Raymond, only Patrick Kane was regularly producing at 5-on-5. Seeking out some fresh depth on the free agent market or via trade is something GM Steve Yzerman hasn't done enough of, and it has hurt Detroit time and again. Speaking of Kane, he's among a handful of veterans, unrestricted free agents, along with David Perron, James Van Riemsdyk, and Cam Talbot. Yzerman will have to ponder in his attempt to get Detroit over the hump. Frankly, the Red Wings can't afford to keep running it back and hoping for different results. They have prospects on the way, and skaters such as Finney are already making a mark, but Detroit needs to look outside itself for answers. Coach Todd McClellan has shown he can pull something special out of his team, even he acknowledged that the Red Wings' mental toughness dipped post-Olympics along with their resiliency. That alone necessitates change. Time will tell how Yzerman proceeds in fixing the issues. Detroit can and should push toward the postseason again. If it can't get into the mix and stay there, it will spell major turnover for the team this time yet again next year. In the men's NCAA ranks, The 2026-27 way too early top 25 rankings are out. And they have Florida Gators at one. They were at one in the previous rankings as well. Their projected lineup: Boogie Flan, Urban Calvazar, Thomas Ho, Alex Condon, and Ruben Chinyolu. Then coming in at two is Duke, Caleb Foster, John Blackwell, Dame Saar, Cameron Williams, and Patrick Gumba. Coming in at three, Michigan Wolverines. Moritz Johnson Jr. left the door open ever so slightly on a return to Michigan, but ultimately kept his name in the NBA draft as a projected top 20 pick. But Dusty May and the reigning national champions will be fine. Despite losing their entire front court, the Wolverines reloaded up front with the additions of transfers Mustafa Thiam from Cincinnati, J.P. Estrada from Tennessee, and Jalen Reed from LSU. They could also be more perimeter-focused next season with the return of Elliot Cadeau and Trey McKinney, as well as the arrival of five-star guard Brandon McCoy. Their projected starting lineup for the year: Elliot Cadeau, Brandon McCoy, Trey McKinney, J.P. Estrada, and Mustafa Thiam. Illinois Fighting Illini coming in at four, and that was their previous ranking. Andre Stojakovic played with the stress levels of Illinois fans a couple times this offseason. First, he announced his intention to return to Champaign just before the transfer portal deadline, then entered the NBA draft and waited until the final hours to withdraw from the draft. But now that he is officially back as a member of the Illini, Brad Underwood's quest for back-to-back Final Fours can begin. Stojakovic joins returnees David Mirkovic, Tomislav Avicic, Zaminar Ivicic, and Jake Davis. Providence transfer Stephen Vox and top 25 recruit Quentin Coleman anchor the backcourt. Coleman, Vox, Stojakovic, Mirkovic, and Tomislav Avicic projected to be a starting lineup there. UConn comes in at five, Tennessee at six, St. John's at seven. Michigan State comes in at eight. They move up one spot from where they were previously at nine. Tom Izzo has the number six recruiting class in the country next season, but the Spartans still will be built primarily on retention. Five of their top seven players from last season are returning, led by potential All-American point guard Jeremy Fears Jr., who withdrew his name from the NBA draft on deadline day. Kurt Tang and Jordan Scott will man the wings, and Cone Carr could be primed for another step forward. Cam Ward is also back after productive flashes as a freshman. Caleb Glenn, a one-time Florida Atlantic transfer, provides shooting, and Charlotte transfer Anton Bonk arrives with much-needed size. Jeremy Fears Jr., Kurt Tang, Jordan Scott, Cone Carr, and Anton Bonk are starters there. Texas at 9, Arizona at 10, Arkansas at 11, USC at 12, Louisville at 13, Virginia at 14, Bama at 15, Houston at 16, Kentucky at 17, Gonzaga at 18, Vanderbilt at 19, Miami at 20, Missouri at 21, Nebraska falls all the way down to 22, Kansas at 23, Iowa State at 24, North Carolina at 25. The next five out: Purdue, St. Louis, Indiana, UCLA, and BYU. Seeing if we can find anything about anything helping else happening around the state right now, but I mean, not really. There isn't a lot going on during these months. Really just the Tigers and some off-season action, which we have definitely talked our way through. But many, many, many schools and the SEC and the Big Ten are trying to push for 24 teams in the college football playoff, not just 16. They want to try and get that to 24, which would be interesting to see. Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti said his preference for a media partner in a 24-team CFP is whoever is committed to making it work. So that kind of tells you where they stand there. But that's all we have. We'll be back with our picks after the break with more Mid Madness here on 95.3, The Ticket.
What does good planning bring to business? Real revenue. With vibrant neighborhoods, pedestrian-friendly avenues, and good public transportation, people in a well-planned community come together in ways that support the local economy. That means that stores, restaurants, and services in the area thrive. Good planning brings value to everyone in the community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A message from this station and the American Planning Association.
Well, Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. We're stepping into my favorite part of this show. It's the picks. This is what all the fun is about, seeing who knows ball, because everybody does not know ball. Sometimes I know ball, and I'm going to tell you, sometimes I don't. But, oh, yeah, I said fun, right? You can get in on the fun when you use the chat feature on 95.3 The Ticket app. And, of course, you let us know who you're picking, right? All you have to do is listen to our picks so you can play along. I'll always run down. There's normally going to be six games, matches, contests, whatever they may be, sometimes a little more. And then I'll run through all of my thoughts, my deliberation, the knowledge that I have, and all the ball-knowing ways that I have to tell you why my picks are going to be right. And then you have the awesome opportunity of being able to do your own research, deliberation, gather all your facts and thoughts, and of course tell us why your picks are going to be better than mine, why they're going to be right, and why you know ball better than I do. And just make sure you submit them in the 95.3 The Ticket app chat feature. And then, you know, if you do it better than me, we'll have something special for you. But as I've mentioned time and time again, I'm undefeated in this game that we call picks. Jacob tried to beat me three times. He beat me zero times. I beat him twice. We tied once. So if somebody out there knows ball better than me, please get around to making it happen. But jumping in here, we got tons of basketball action. But we're going to start on the gridiron. We got some football to get to. Playoff football is already back with the UFL. It feels weird to have gotten here so fast, but without a Michigan team in the UFL this year, it's been a little bit harder to keep up with it. But they made it through their 10-week regular season. The one seed's going to play the four seed, and the two and three seed will play each other. The one seed this year was the Orlando Storm, a newer team this year. They're 8-2. They're going to be three-point favorites in their semifinal game. The over-under sits at 47.5. The D.C. Defenders turned out to be the fourth seed in this year's UFL season. They were 5-5. This game will be 3 p.m. on ABC. As I mentioned, the Storm, best team in the league, scored 232 points this season, but only gave up 186. That is the fewest in the entire league. Their score differential of plus 46 is tied for second best in the league, and they're on a four-game win streak. Their opponent, the D.C. Defenders, have scored 281 points. They've only given up 224 points. Their score differential of plus 57 is the best in the league, but they do have a small problem. They're on a four-game losing streak, which makes this game very spicy to pick. You have one team that is absolutely thriving, winning games at an unbelievable rate, the best team in the league by record, but hasn't scored nearly as many points as the other team, but then also hasn't given up nearly as many points as the other team. So where do you lean? If this becomes an offensive shootout, one team probably has a little bit better chances than the other, but if this is a defensive grind, one team definitely has a better chance than the other, but I'm going to go with trends here. You win four games in a row, I'm not going to expect you to lose one now, especially not with all of this on the line. Give me the Orlando Storm to come out victorious in their semifinal matchup, hoping to have a matchup against the other winner from the semifinals in the finals that'll be going on next week. The Louisville Kings are 6-4. The St. Louis Battlehawks are also 6-4. They're giving St. Louis 1.5-point favorites in this game, 46.5 on the over-under. This game will be 6 p.m. on Fox on Sunday, June 7th. Both of these UFL games are going to be on Sunday. The Battlehawks are the second seed in the league, 212 points for 197 against plus 15 in the score differential. They've given up the second fewest points in the league, but they are on a one-game losing streak after finishing 6-4. The Kings, on the other hand, have scored 265 points. They've given up 219 points. They're tied in second with that plus 46 score differential with the Orlando Storm. And there's also something else they have in common with the Orlando Storm. They're on a four-game win streak. Granted, St. Louis is only on a one-game losing streak, so they just lost last week, which is a completely different story than, you know, being on a four-game losing streak. The Battlehawks lost to the Renegades, which was kind of like a whatever, like we're playing for seeding, but if we lose this game, we're in the playoffs regardless. So there may have been some resting going on there for the Battlehawks that wasn't happening for the Renegades. The Kings took care of business against the Aviators, no question, 42-27. So I'm not 100% sure where to go with this one because it's a little bit different. But the four-game win streak is still screaming out at your boy. So I'm going to have to take the Kings over the Battlehawks. So pairing up for a Storm versus Kings, two new teams going to the UFL Championship right away, that would be bonkers. But with that being said, we are stepping on to the hardwood, and we're going to start in the NBA. We're going to start with Game 3 of the NBA Finals. As we know of my recording right now, the Knicks lead the series 1-0. Game 2 will be Friday night, which is honestly after I record, but before you listen to this, so y'all know what happened there. I'm going to say that the Spurs are going to win Game 2 at home. I feel confident about that. So that's going to be a 1-1 tie headed back to New York for Game 3, which will be June 8th, 8:30 p.m. on ABC. It's going to be a Madison Square Garden, obviously, in New York City. They're giving the Knicks a 57.7% chance to win, a 42.3% chance for the Spurs. My problem with this game is if the Knicks somehow find a way to win Game 2 down in San Antonio, there is zero way they're going to win Game 3 in New York. The Spurs will come back with vengeance, and they know that they cannot get swept, and they know how hard it would be to lose Game 3, and even if they won Game 4, to win Game 5 again, and then they have to win Game 6, and they have to win Game 7. That's hard, man. To win four games in a row like that, it's a very tough position to be in, and I don't think the Spurs want to find themselves there. So that has me leaning more toward the Spurs winning Game 2 and the Knicks winning Game 3 than for the Knicks to win Game 2 and Game 3. Because I'm picking the Knicks to win Game 3 regardless. I do believe they're going to go back home and win that first game. It's just a matter of, do I really think the Knicks can be up 3-0 in the NBA Finals against the Spurs? Not 100% sure, but we surely are going to find out. I'm taking the Knicks to win Game 3, and that definitely may come back to bite me, but there's only one way to find out. The game has to be played. Speaking of games being played, the WNBA Commissioner's Cup is off and popping. Three games going down this week. Well, technically four games going down on Saturday, but we're only going to touch in on three. We're starting with a rematch that just happened not too long ago. The Golden State Valkyries, 6-4, 2-2 on the road, will take on the Las Vegas Aces at 3 p.m. later today on ABC. 6-3 are the Aces. They're 0-2 at home, though. Michelob Ultra Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. They're giving the Aces a 67.5% chance, a 32.5% chance for the Valkyries. 4.5-point favorite for the Aces, negative 192 on the money line, plus 160 for the Valkyries, 168.5 on the over-under. Right now, Valkyries, or the Aces, lead this series 91-81 back on May 1st or 31st. So literally just a couple days ago, the Aces took down the Valkyries, and I'm going to pick them to do it again. Chenity Carter, Jewel Lloyd, both game time decisions, but regardless whether they play or not, one team has somebody by the name of Aja Wilson and the other one does not. That is plain and simple for me. I'm taking Aja Wilson and Chelsea Gray to continue to lead the Aces to success. I mean, they're 6-3 early. Remember this time last year, they were not 6-3, and everybody was wondering what was going to happen with the Aces, and all of a sudden, they were back rolling and in the playoffs. You can't count the Aces out ever, and you can never really go against Aja Wilson, so I'm going to take the Aces to take down the Valkyries. 6 p.m. later today on League Pass, Monumental sports as well. The Washington Mystics are 4-4, 3-2 on the road, taking on the Atlanta Dream, who are 6-3 and 3-1 at home. 24.9% chance for the Mystics, 75.1% chance for Atlanta. 9.5-point favorites are the Dream, negative 470 on the money line, plus 360 for the Mystics, 160.5 on the over-under. To be at the Gateway Center in College Park, Georgia, Jordan Canada leads the dream in the assist category. Alicia Gray pouring in the points. Angel Reese, you know she grabbing them me bounds, baby. Kiki Irifin, she's leading the Mystics in rebounds. Sonia Cintron, who is out at the moment, leads them in points. And Georgia Amore, who is back and on the court, leads them in assists. But those injuries are quite scary. But also, regardless of the injuries, hottest team in the league right now is the Atlanta Dream. I'm not going against the Dream, even if you paid me money to do it. I'm picking the Dream to win anyway because they are playing at an unbelievable rate. They've taken down Phoenix, Connecticut, and Portland in their last five. They have losses to Minnesota and Indiana. On the other side, Mystics took down Chicago and Seattle, but also have losses to the Sparks, Seattle, and Dallas. So lots of movement there, but I'm going to take the Dream to continue having success, not only in the season, but at home, and improving their record to 7-3 and 4-1 at home. The last game of the weekend, also in the WNBA, will be 8 p.m. later today. CBS, Paramount Plus, FUBU for some. Indiana Fever, 5-4, 1-2 on the road, taking on the New York Liberty, who are 6-4 and 4-3 at home. The fact that they've had seven home games already, bonkers. This is the first game in the season matchup for them. 38.6% chance for the Fever, 61.4% chance for the Liberty. Will be at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Fever led by Kelsey Mitchell, Aaliyah Boston, and Caitlin Clark. Liberty led by Brianna Stewart, Big Stewie, Jonquel Jones, and Maureen Johannes, which they both have done a fantastic job. Sabrina Ionescu being out is really troublesome. The Fever are 3-2 in their last five, wins over the Dream, the Valkyrie, and the Portland Fire, but also losses to the Valkyrie and Portland Fire. Meanwhile, Liberty also 3-2 in their last five, losses to the Wings and the Fire, but two back-to-back wins over Phoenix and then a win over the Toronto Tempo, and they're on a three-game win streak. So I'm not going to go against win streaks. I know how I feel about vibes. I'm going with the Liberty to win it as well, which gives me Knicks, Storm, Kings, Aces, Dream, and Liberty headed into this weekend. Don't forget to continue catch your Tigers action here on The Ticket. But we'll be back next week with more sports action across the state of Michigan with 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.